This is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the first weekend of December 2018. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. Dockless scooters present pitfalls and potholes for police, pedestrians, and insurers.
People that are getting on these scooters, they have no experience riding them. They get up to 15, 20 miles an hour.
The U.S. government waiving FBI checks on staff at a camp for migrant teens in West Texas.
None of the 2,100 staff who work at Tornillo are going through the really rigorous FBI fingerprint background checks.
And why are Austin's trees having such a colorful autumn?
That one's a nice orange and yellow color with its brother next door. With still some green on it.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend. Thank you so much for listening this week. I apologize that we had no episode last week for Thanksgiving. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving with your friends or family. And we're not taking off time for Christmas, so there's that. Now, if you've spent any time in Central Austin in the past few months, you have seen them. Dockless electric scooters you can rent with your smartphone. They've been around since May, and love them or hate them, they present some interesting legal questions for city officials, for police, and as KUT's Jimmy Moss reports, for insurance companies.
Electric motorized scooters are here and growing. Scooter company Lime says there have been more than 1 million rides on its scooters in Austin since June. It has 500 scooters on the road, with plans for as many as 4,500. Bird has more than 500 scooters on the streets. Jump, a subsidiary of Uber, is the newest entrant in Austin. It has 1,000 scooters here. All those scooters are competing for space on busy roads and walkways, and inexperienced riders mean accidents. But since we're in the early stages of the city's scooter regulations, just who's at fault in scooter accidents isn't as clear as you would think. KUT host Rebecca McEnroy learned this the hard way last month. She was driving her car out of a parking garage.
Driving out, put my parking pass in, waved to the attendant who was sitting there, and then I started to drive forward. I looked to my right because it's a one-way going south. I slowed down, stopped, and then I hear this whoosh. And I see this guy fly like onto my car and then jump around, and he was on a scooter. So I see like the scooter lying there.
At that point, things proceeded as they would normally after a crash. Police and EMS were called. The man on the scooter was injured but declined leave in an ambulance. In the 20 minutes they were on the scene, Austin police officers talked with Rebecca.
You know, they said that they see a lot of this and they don't know what to do. They don't know if they're supposed to ticket them for riding on the sidewalk. They don't know if they're supposed to ticket them for not wearing helmets. They don't know what the protocol is when they are in an accident.
Right now, with the stage we are in scooters being introduced to Austin, a lot of that's very new.
That's Sergeant Michael Barger with the Austin Police Department. He says things are so new with scooters, there's a little gap with newer officers.
You have the brand new officer who just came out of the academy, and they may teach, you know, about the scooters in the academy, so he's going to be knowledgeable. Then you have the guy who's been out for a year and came out just right before the scooters came out, and he has no idea how to handle a scooter. And then you have officers with more experience who are, you know, going back and going, well, that's a bicycle. They're understanding that a scooter is handled the same way as a bicycle, and it's just a logical process for them.
This could change in the future, but right now, the state of Texas considers e-scooters the equivalent of bikes. They have two wheels, they go under 30 miles an hour, and most can ride with little training. Also, theoretically, there is less risk for injury.
In medical coding now, there is a very specific code for two-wheeled motorized scooters. So it's very distinct from motorcycles, bicycles.
Dr. Melinda McMichael is the interim director at the University Health Center at UT Austin. She says her clinic has been keeping tabs on scooter injuries that come through the facility since the semester started. The number of incidents has grown every month: 26 in September, 32 in October, and 22 as of November 15th, which would mean it's on pace for 44 with two more weeks to go in the month.
What we normally see people for are things like knee injuries, sprained ankles, lacerations, abrasions, head injuries. But I think it's important to point out that this doesn't count the number of people that went straight to the emergency room. So my guess is the numbers are much higher than this.
APD Sergeant Barger thinks the scooters help get cars off the road, but there might be more restrictions on them down the road because of those injuries.
You have people that are getting on these scooters. They have no experience riding them. They get up to 15, 20 miles an hour. It's a dangerous mode of transportation because it's got a high center of gravity because you're standing up as you ride on it. And if you hit a pothole, you're going to go over the handlebars on it.
But until something changes, the law is murky. Robert Rodriguez is an officer with UT's police department. He says his department has not issued citations for scooter-related offenses unless it's been particularly egregious. UTPD is trying to educate riders that they have to follow the rules of the road since scooters are vehicles, unless scooters are involved in a crash with a motorized vehicle.
The way they see the scooters is almost like a pedestrian or a bicyclist because they're not required by law to carry liability insurance. It becomes a civil matter at that point between the driver of the vehicle and the person riding the scooter.
Scooter companies all carry liability insurance that protects the company. There is no comprehensive insurance that would cover any damage you might cause on a scooter. In fact, the companies don't cover the rider at all. And there's a good chance that even if you have a solid homeowner's or renter's insurance policy, you're not covered here either.
None of the insurance you have currently is probably going to help you.
Jason Hargraves is managing editor for insurancequotes.com.
Because your homeowner's policy does carry with you for some instances for liability purposes, except when it involves a motorized vehicle. And that's exactly what a scooter is.
So in the eyes of insurance companies, homeowner policy issuers, the scooter is a motor vehicle, so it's not covered in collisions with cars or SUVs like Rebecca McEnroy's. Her SUV had a large dent in the left side and her driver's side door was hard to open because things were out of place. So she called her car insurance company.
And I said, I was just in this accident and I was hit by a guy on a scooter and my car's really damaged. And they didn't really know what to do about it. They said, okay, well, we're not really sure what to file this under, but we will contact him.
But then days later, it took a turn that she did not see coming.
She said, we have to wait for the police report because he said that you hit him. And I was taken aback because he had hit the side of my car. So really, I could not have hit him. But he having said that I hit him, that would make it my fault. And they said then it would be on my file as hitting a pedestrian, which is not a good thing to have on your record.
But then Rebecca remembered something. The garage attendant said the crash would have been recorded by security cameras, so she got the video.
Then I sent that to my insurance company. After she watched it, she said, clearly he's at fault.
She was still out of deductible, but no huge scar on her file. Its final classification, the guy on the scooter, was an uninsured motorist. Jimmy Moss, KUT News.
By the way, this week, the city of Austin ordered Lime to remove 1,000 scooters from its fleet after the transportation department found more than 1,100 Lime scooters downtown. That company is only permitted to have 500 downtown. So Lime agreed with the city to allocate its 5,000 scooters to different parts of the city. Austin's transportation director, Rob Spiller, said in a statement that, quote, our goal is to create a safe, equitable, fair, and transparent mobility environment for everyone, end quote. Sam Saddle, director of Lime's government relations, says the demand for their scooters is what created the glut downtown, saying in a statement the company had an unintentional overdeployment of scooters downtown and that they worked to fix it. The 1,000 scooter reduction is for 30 days. After then, the city says it will revisit the matter. The Austin Independent School District's Board of Trustees voted to rename just one of five schools with a Confederate namesake. as KUT's Claire McInerney reports the other schools did not receive a vote at this week's meeting.
Since February, the board has been waiting to approve new names for five AISD buildings: Lanier, Reagan, and Eastside Memorial High Schools, Fillmore Middle School, and the Allen Center. They voted to rename the Allen Center, a former elementary school, after Anita Coy, a former district administrator. The board decided to wait on a vote for Eastside until after a renovation, and no members put forward a motion for Lanier, Reagan, or Fillmore. Ann Teich, who represents Lanier, said she's not in favor of completely changing the names because of the cost.
A continued concern to me is the cost entailed in renaming a school, particularly schools that are well over 100 years old or even 50 years old, in the face of financial pressures currently faced by AISD.
The board did not give a timeline for when it will vote on the other schools. Claire McInerney, KUT News.
For the past decade, the percentage of uninsured children in Texas was falling. But according to a new report from Georgetown University, between 2016 and 2017, that rate went up. KUT's Ashley Lopez reports that Texas now has the highest percentage of children without insurance in the country.
According to the study, the rate went from 9.8 to 10.7% in that year. While the number of children who get insurance from their parents' employer did go up a little bit, children getting insurance through government programs went down. That includes Medicaid, the Children's Health Insurance Program, also known as CHIP, and insurance through the individual market created by Obamacare. Adriana Kohler with Texans Care for Children says actions from the Trump administration and Congress led to fewer eligible children enrolling.
This is a disturbing report for anyone who wants Texas kids to get eyeglasses they need to read the board at school, mental health care to stay healthy. This is disturbing for families who want kids to get treatment for cancer before it spreads, routine checkups, and everything else that health insurance can mean for a child.
Researchers who worked on the report also say a growing number of children in mixed-status families are foregoing health care coverage their children are eligible for. They say that could also be increasing the rate of children in Texas without coverage. A quarter of citizen children in the U.S. have parents who are immigrants. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
The Austin City Council wants the city to have a bigger role in overseeing homes for seniors and people with mental and physical disabilities. KUT's Audrey McGlinchey explains.
So let's back up a second. In 2009, state lawmakers allowed cities and counties to start regulating boarding homes. Councilmember Leslie Poole said this week the city could create a licensing and training program for care providers.
My intention here is to spark a conversation in our community on the issue of quality home care for the truly vulnerable residents among us who need it the most and who are, frankly, the most susceptible to exploitation and abuse.
Council members passed the measure at their meeting today. They made sure to clarify they don't intend to close down any of these homes, something Councilmember Delia Garza was concerned about.
As a firefighter, I remember being on medical calls in some of these homes, and it's really some of them are really, really sad situations. But it's also because that's where the family can't afford to have, family members.
City staff is supposed to come up with suggestions on how to improve regulation of these homes by April. Audrey McGlinchey, KUT News.
A temporary shelter for migrant children in the isolated desert of far west Texas may not be so temporary after all. The Trump administration announced in June that it was setting up air-conditioned canvas tents in Tornillo, Texas, for then fewer than 400 children, mostly from Central America. But now, according to new reporting by the Associated Press, more than 2,300 girls and boys between the ages of 13 and 17 are sleeping on rows of bunk beds inside these tents. AP reporter Garance Burke has a new story about this with her colleague Martha Mendoza. Thank you for joining us, Garance.
Thank you.
Will the federal government be able to close this tent city near Tornillo by New Year's Eve as planned?
It's looking less and less likely because now that there are more than 2,300 kids housed in the tent city in Tornillo, there's really nowhere else for them to go. Most of the shelters that the federal government runs for migrant kids are already full. And so they're really left without too many options other than keeping it open. And obviously the conditions there have raised a bunch of concerns.
And I want to ask you about those conditions, but first, can you just give us some context about the cost to taxpayers of this facility?
Sure. Well, one of the most surprising things that we found is that actually the cost to keep teens at this tent city is much higher than anyone had previously acknowledged. The government had been saying it was an average of about $775 a night for each child who spends their sleeping hours at Tornillo. But actually, we learned from sources that that cost can go up to $1,200 a night per child that taxpayers are footing the bill for.
How many staff at this facility are getting fingerprint-based background checks?
So none of the 2,100 staff who work at Tornillo are going through the really rigorous FBI fingerprint background checks that are meant to ensure that the kids are kept safe. This is according to a government watchdog memo that we obtained. They are instead putting them through different kinds of less stringent background checks, which really raise concerns as to whether the kids are in appropriate care.
What kind of mental health care services are offered to these teenagers being housed far away from their families, to them, what probably feels like in the middle of nowhere?
So many of these teens have come on a really arduous and traumatizing journey to get to the United States, and they're now housed in this big tent city on federal land. The federal government has, to some extent, used that as a justification to waive the normal kinds of mental health services that would be provided to migrant teens in government custody. At Tornillo, the shelter operators are allowed to staff just one mental health clinician for every 100 kids, as opposed to other types of standard migrant shelters where generally there's one clinician for every 12 children.
How long are these children staying at this particular facility?
The Trump administration set up this temporary tent city in June. It was meant as a short-term way station for migrant children who are about to be reunited with their family here in the U.S. No more than 30 days at the time, the government said the kids would stay there. But in actuality, some of the kids there have been in the tent city since June. There are 2,300 of them. The average stay at Tornillo is still less than a month, we believe. But of course, that means that some are staying much longer than that and others shorter in order to get to that average.
Garance, what were your personal observations when you visited the tent city at Tornillo?
When I was there, I was really struck by just how isolated this facility is. It's right along the U.S.-Mexico border in the middle of the desert, surrounded by fields and dusty roads. The kids are led in single-file lines by minders at all times, even when they go to the bathroom or eat. They sleep in bunk beds in rows in these small tents. Some of these tents were actually used to house first responders to Hurricane Harvey. And the facility is really highly secured. There's chain link fencing surrounding it, many guards, floodlights come up at night, that sort of thing.
Garance Burke is a reporter for the Associated Press, joining us to talk about her story on the emergency shelter in Tornillo, Texas, that has grown into a vast desert detention camp housing more than 2,300 migrant teens, cared for by staff who do not undergo the more rigorous fingerprint-based background checks at a cost of up to $1,200 per kid per night. The facility is run by a faith-based organization called BCFS Health and Human Services, based in San Antonio. You can read the story at apnews.com. Garance, thank you so much for talking to KUT.
Thank you.
On average, women spend nearly 2,500 days of their life, that's about 7 years altogether, on their period, when they need to make sure they have a pad or a tampon. Now, if they don't, that can make for a very uncomfortable and often stressful situation. But as KUT's Nadia Hamdan reports, students at the University of Texas at Austin have found a way to make those products more accessible.
I'm in the Texas Union asking people about their periods. I swear it's not as awkward as it sounds. Even when I ask if they've ever been in a situation where they've been without a tampon or pad and needed one, Their faces immediately express a mixture of laughter and dread as they conjure up similar stories of frustration.
So many times it's just like unexpected and you're not prepared, and like I can't tell you how many times I've just like wadded up toilet paper.
In high school, I was at a choir competition and I needed it. It surprised me. It came out of the blue. I just started having my period and I had to use toilet paper instead.
I just sat there and was like, well, I guess I'm using this one-ply toilet paper to just get through the rest of the day until I can go home.
That was UT sophomore Molly Miller, junior Grace Stanley, and senior Miraz Rahman. And Rahman is important to this story. She's the vice president of student government at UT. She led an effort to get the university to start a pilot program offering free period products in the women's restrooms at the student unions.
This project was actually not something that was started by student government. It was something that a lot of groups have been pushing for.
Service groups such as the Orange Jackets, the nonprofit called Period, and other organizations have been pushing to get free menstrual products on campus for a while now. But it was Rahman who finally got things moving. Over the summer, she went to the university union's director to first introduce the idea of making period products more accessible.
Hey, I know that we don't have period products available for free, but I think it would really help if just temporarily we could have them be sold at the provisions on demand little carts at the union's buildings.
There are two student union buildings on campus, the Texas Union and the Student Activity Center. In each of them, there are these small stands called pods. They offer things like snack food, school supplies, and other, quote, everyday essentials. Until Rahman said something, tampons and pads had not been considered everyday essentials. But once she brought it up, the union's director quickly agreed.
He was like, oh, yeah, honestly, you know, I'm not sure why I didn't even think of that. So that can be something that's arranged.
And it was. The pods started selling tampons and pads. But Rahman began to wonder if she could actually push for what she really wanted, free tampons and pads in the restrooms.
Condoms are freely distributed to everybody. We understand, you know, it's a public health thing where it's infection prevention. But the thing that gets forgotten about the conversation with periods is that the lack of access to these resources is also something that could be a public health concern.
Mara started talking about that, and I said, yeah, I think we need to launch this pilot program. So we launched a pilot program here at the Texas Union.
That's Union's director, Mulugeta Fareda. Earlier this month, the old dispensers in the Texas Union bathrooms, the ones that required 25 cents for a tampon or pad, were retrofitted. Now they have bold black lettering on the top that reads free, with a little lever that immediately releases the product. The same thing is expected to happen at the Student Activity Center in the coming weeks.
This is the living room of the campus. So we average about 12,000 students coming through our building.
The pilot program will last until August. The university unions have budgeted $5,000 to last until then. They want to see how far that takes them, because Ferede says, ultimately, this is a question about money. Right now, the unions are taking on the full cost of the pilot program. But Fedadeh says he plans to partner with other organizations to help raise money if offering these products for free becomes permanent, which he hopes it does.
It's a service and it's a hygiene issue for a population of our students. And to me, that makes sense.
UT is part of a growing worldwide movement to offer free period products on school campuses. But it's an uphill battle. Even though the topic is being brought up more often, talking about periods is still pretty taboo. And Miraz Rahman says that leads to a big misunderstanding about what people with periods go through.
Some of the research that we found was that a good portion of women experience irregular periods. It's not something you can necessarily predict all the time. There's a lot of different reasons why people can't just prepare for this in advance.
When that happens, buying a pack isn't so easy. A box of tampons or a package of pads range from $7 to $10. And that's not including the sales tax that Texas and 34 other states still apply to those things. For many students who are already struggling financially, that's a lot of money to dish out every time your period comes around. That's why, like we heard earlier, most women just use toilet paper. In the end, Rahman says the unions are a great start, but her ultimate goal is to make sure there are no barriers whatsoever for people who experience menstruation.
This includes those in the transgender community who would want access in both men's and gender-neutral bathrooms. Rahman says, for now, her plan is to just keep talking about periods, and hopefully, enough people listen.
Of course, I'll try to do my part to have those conversations and to educate people, but if I'm not met halfway, it's not something that I'm going to be able to do by myself.
Nazia Hamdan, KUT News.
Austin is known for a lot of things, but great fall foliage is not one of them. That is, until this year. In fact, this year, the leaves have been so colorful that a listener asked our AT Explained project why. So, KUT's Mose Bouchel joined him for a little walk. They went out to enjoy the scenery, but if you listen closely, you may also hear the answers to his question.
This one is really beautiful.
Oh, yeah. We should walk down here a little bit and have a look at it.
It was a gorgeous fall morning when I met our question asker, Doug Addison, in front of Temple Beth Israel on Shoal Creek Boulevard.
Just enjoying the trees here on the grounds of the temple and then also along the banks of Shoal Creek.
And the creek here still has some water in it after all that rain we got this fall.
It had been cold the night before, but as we walked, the sun started to warm us. It was one of those mornings when you're not sure if you need your jacket or not.
Yeah. Gonna zip it up because we're heading into the shade and the breeze.
As we walked, the leaves did not disappoint.
That one's a nice orange and yellow color with its brother next door with still some green on it.
There's also a surprising amount of red.
And so do you know what kinds of trees these are that you're looking at?
I can't really tell what that one is.
It could be, you know, some trees lend themselves to colors more than others.
Sure,
but...
I know, I think the elms are really supposed to be doing well with the color this year. But it just seems like all over town, all the trees are getting in on the act. You know, in my 24 years in Austin, I have not remembered quite such vibrant fall colors. And I just wondered what factors contributed to that.
Okay, so now is the part where I usually call up an expert and try to get answers. But the thing is, Doug thought he kind of probably knew the answers. I did too, and maybe you do. So instead of doing this the normal way, when I edited the tape of this walk, I put hints in there, pointing to those answers. Now, what we're going to do is rewind the tape. And we'll listen again. Yes, this time we'll listen along with an expert. And with her help, all should be made clear. Let's go.
See, the ocean is enjoying the trees here on the grounds of the temple and then also along the banks of Shoal Creek.
And the creek here still has some water in it after all that rain we got this fall.
Stop. Stop.
This is our expert. Her name is April Rose. She's the Urban Forest Health Coordinator for the City of Austin. And she says that fall rain I mentioned, almost 16 inches just in September and October, has something to do with all these colors.
So our trees were very well nourished with water, and that definitely helped them retain their leaves long into the fall when often some of the leaves might have already been dropping.
Why does that matter? Well, let's go back to our walk. It had been cold the night before, but as we walked, the sun started to warm us. It was one of those mornings when you're not sure if you need your jacket or not.
Yeah. Gonna zip it up because we're heading into the shade and the breeze.
Wait a minute.
That's right, the cold is another hint. More trees kept their leaves into cold temperatures that came earlier this year.
And so they were keeping their leaves longer. And so as the temperatures dropped and the chlorophyll, the green pigment, started to break down from the lower temperatures, the leaves didn't fall just yet. And the orange and yellow were able to kind of really shine through before the leaves are going to fall off shortly.
Some even say that juxtaposition between warm days and cold nights that I noticed with Doug also helps bring out the color. But back to our walk.
It could be, you know, some trees lend themselves to colors more than others.
Sure,
but...
sure.
Hold on.
I know, I think the elms are really supposed to be doing well with the color this year.
Stop right there.
Here's the last part. It comes down to Austin's tree diversity.
I agree that I've seen that the elm trees have been producing yellow, really brilliant yellow fall color for a couple of weeks now.
But she says there are also a lot more different kinds of trees in Austin than there used to be, each with their own colors. That might be the last reason for this beautiful symphony of foliage.
I mean, I look at trees all day, every day, and I am also overwhelmed this year by the brilliance and diversity of colors. Like, it's very spectacular this year.
All the trees are getting in on the act.
So get out and enjoy, because there's no telling when we'll get another show like this one. Moz Bushel, KET News.
That's KUT Weekend for the first weekend of December 2018. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org and email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org or ask me on Twitter. I'm at KUT Nathan. And if you could, leave us a kind review in the Apple Podcasts app if that's how you listen to this. Our theme music is by RAC. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. And then,